Hello and welcome back, Curious to Serious listeners. This is your host, Gabby. In this episode, I talk to Dr. Howard Lipp and Ina V. They have been working together as facilitators of plant medicine for several years now, and they are sharing their insights and their experiences in this super fascinating and awakening-filled episode. Howard starts off our conversation by talking about how he was called to plant medicine after he had been working through addiction and he got sober. And then he actually met Ina shortly after that when they connected over producing music. Ina then found her way to plant medicine through Howard. So their experiences together paved the road for them to facilitate ceremonies with plant medicine for others. Since COVID, they've been opening up more about their ceremonial work as a way to enlighten the world to the essential role of integrating divine psychedelic experiences into life beyond just the ceremony. Ina has a master's degree in Indigenous science from Naropa University, and that provided her with some really unique and specialized experiences that were led by Indigenous elders while walking the Red Road and learning from traditional oral earth-based traditions. We discuss how Ina's experiences with sweat lodges and vision quests shaped the framework that they use for facilitating ceremonies. Howard recently received his PhD in metaphysical humanistic science, and so Howard takes some time to talk about how he was able to integrate his life experiences with plant medicine into his PhD program. It's a really unique program that he was in because it gave him the freedom to merge intellectual and academic exploration along with his life experience, and it was very much a process of integration for him. We also touch on topics of community and connection and the sentient role of plants in guiding our psychedelic experiences. And finally, we wrap up our conversation by looking at the future of Howard and Ina's work in continuing to provide integrative and ongoing support for other facilitators and other individuals engaged in psychedelic work. Be sure to check out the links in the show notes. I include links to Ina and Howard's website and their music and some of their social media links. So be sure to check them out so you can see what work they're doing and what work they're going to be continuing to do. Additionally, before we get started, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. This podcast wouldn't be here without MAPS, whose support has allowed us to keep the online psychedelic grad community platform free for all of our members. And it allows us to publish these insightful conversations so that everyone can enjoy and learn from them. We also have an opportunity for our listeners to support Psychedelic Grad. If you visit the links in the show notes, you'll find a link to our Buy Us a Coffee page where you can donate to Psychedelic Grad and keep the dream alive so that we can continue to provide these resources and education to our growing community. Finally, I want to give a big thank you to our listeners for joining me in this just really beautiful and heart-opening conversation that I have with Dr. Howard Lipp and Ina V. Welcome, Howard and Ina, and thank you for joining me today on the Curious to Serious podcast. I'm so excited to have you both on with me. This is going to be a really special episode. It's the first time that I've had two people on at the same time, so I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation to hear about your work and hear how you work together and all of the fun things that come along with that.
Well, thank you, Gabby, for having us.
Thanks, Gabby. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. So to get us started, why don't you just give us some background on what you do and just tell our listeners, what's that all about?
Thanks, Gabby. Well, Ina and I have been working together, starting in music, but ultimately working with plant medicine. For me, plant medicine called me because I needed some sanity after getting sober. Because the process of getting sober and the fellowship around it didn't really provide the healing transformation that I needed. So psychedelics called me and I went, you know, and really it was through that that my life evolved. Even the kind of music that I was working on, because at the time I was producing music, changed and opened the door for Ina to show up in my life. I had been working in a completely different area of music for a long time before I met her. But I had had this awakening with plant medicine, with ayahuasca, that said, you know, the message of the music is really important, and it's really impactful on the people who are experiencing the music. And the message to me was that there's an extreme responsibility to be mindful of what we're putting out there. And so that made me take a detour from the kind of music I was doing to more uplifting, inspiring, devotional, even funny music. And that's when Ina came into my life. And working on a record was about literally her experience of awakening as a young person coming out of college and having this split between what she had lived up until that moment and what was calling her. And that's how eventually I invited her to try this plant medicine.
Well, we were working in the studio together, and through the process of recording some of these songs that I had written, they were like a journal entry of my life. And through that process, it was very healing. And Howard was not only in a way midwifing these songs, but he was also in the framework of plant medicine that I hadn't had any experience with. And I was raised in a family environment and cultural environment that was very religious. And also I was an athlete, extreme athlete. And when I left that world, which is its own story, I went on this journey of exploring earth-based traditions, indigenous traditions. I ended up getting my master's in indigenous science. I walked the Red Road for many years, learning about the sweat lodge and elements, fire and water and the Mother Earth and the star nations. And it was very, very healing and transformational time. But underlying all of that was this deep depression and growing anxiety that I had for many years. Off and on, it was debilitating. I'd be out of commission for 4 or 5 months, sometimes in bed for many, many months, at least many weeks. And I was not able to function because leaving the bubble and safety net of religion as a way of, I knew where I was coming from and I knew where I was going based on the belief system. When I left that, it was very disorienting and deregulating. And so I also grew up in a no drugs, no nothing perspective and way of life. And so when Howard was telling me about plant medicine, it was a strong no for me, because I just didn't want to be addicted or reliant upon anything. Even I had been prescribed SSRIs early on in my journey, and I had refused to take them because, again, I wanted to face whatever was arising, but I didn't have the tools to do that. And so when my first experience with plant medicine, and specifically ayahuasca, came across my path, and it was through Howard, my first journey was this incredible coming home, a deep coming home and an answer to so many deep questions about my existence here as a human, about my purpose, about feeling so disconnected as a human being. And it opened up and began this journey that we've been on together for 15 years.
That's a really beautiful story of how you kind of came together. So I guess it makes me wonder, obviously music is a big part of the story, right? But it's not the only work that you do, right? So what is this, you said 15-year journey. What have you been doing over these 15 years along with making music?
Well, from the moment I started working with plant medicine, I felt compelled to be a participatory and supported in every way I could. And I went to a retreat where I met a master shaman from Peru and one of his students. And I went to a retreat or to a attend at that master shaman's facility down in Peru. But I made a real connection with his student. And when I came back from that retreat, I reconnected with him and I started to supporting his work. And I didn't intend to be a facilitator. I didn't even intend to be an assistant, but very quickly I was assisting him in all the ways, you know, making it, facilitating ceremonies, learning how that worked, learning all these different ways in which songs to sing and how to support the process. And so I became his right hand for several years, and then eventually started leading them myself. And a year after that, or year and a half after that, I met Ina. And so after meeting her and her experience with medicine work, because while she had not taken psychedelics at all in her life, she had walked the Red Road, the Native American way, doing Lakota sweat lodges and vision quests with a man who was trained by an elder for years. So she was very familiar with the medicine way, just not the altered state plant medicine way. And so that, for me, was, you know, a little bell that said, what a great team. And when she experienced it, it was very clear that there was a deeper partnership that would bring a balanced masculine and feminine to the work.
Yeah. And I think too, my very first medicine ceremony that I experienced with plant medicine was, as I mentioned earlier, this kind of tying all these pieces together and bringing me home. I had walked many traditions and paths leading up to meeting Howard, seeking and searching for some connection to a greater source, power, God, presence. When I left the church, that was such a deep vacuum that had been created. And yet I knew that I couldn't just take on another one because of my upbringing. And yet it, in my deepest essence or self, there was this longing for coming home, a connection, a way of saying, I belong here. And my first ceremony was that coming home in the sense of, not only do I belong here, I am the here that I'm seeking. I am the essence that was, I thought, created a vacuum in me, was never real. There was no empty hole. It was just in my head because I didn't have a book or a church or a temple or a synagogue or something to solidify that outside of me. The plants were coming in to not only my body, but my awareness and saying, hey, Ina, you are already home. And I could feel through my whole body and my hands were going up and down my arms and my legs, almost like putting myself back together. And I too, like Howard, I was not seeking to facilitate or become anybody. I just was really looking to come home. And the plants never said to me, now you must follow us, which was also really, gave me a sense of peace because I didn't want to now I'm following this. That was always this deep concern in me, was that I was going to take on another belief system or ideology or path when that's not what I was looking for. I was just looking really to be at peace. And that first ceremony was such a revelation for me in that way. And I didn't come out of that first ceremony and say, I'm going to facilitate, but it was just this deep, deep coming home. And I knew in that moment that this was, quote, my medicine, that I had been seeking this, and that not, you know, it wasn't that my depression or anxiety went away. I mean, I had a child and anxiety just came back with a roaring rage, but that I was able to see it in a way that was not who I am. And at that first ceremony, I don't know if I could articulate it like I am now in the sense of, oh, those were a set of beliefs, thoughts, attachments, identifications, but I knew in my essence that was true. I just couldn't articulate it at the time. And because of my work before meeting Howard, that I had walked this particular path, and I ended up writing my thesis about how the sweat lodge or Inipi is this ceremony of rebirth. And I had spent years doing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sweat lodges in Europe and walking with a medicine man there and doing dozens of 10-day vision quests and putting people on the hill, including myself, for 4 days and four nights, no food, no water, and going through a rebirth there. And in Lakota, they call it Umblechaya. It's like a calling for a vision. And those experiences were in some ways near death experiences. You're opening the pineal gland as you enter the edge of life and death. Truly, it's a physical, I mean, you don't die up there, but it's a very direct feeling of being on the edge. And when I came to do medicine, I laugh at this now, but it was like, wow, this is so much easier. It's in some ways physically, because I didn't have to put myself on that edge of life and death to receive deeper, greater insight into the truth of my existence. And I just knew in some way, as Howard is mentioning, through our music and also just the dynamic between us and this balance that I was experiencing, as Howard mentioned, between the masculine and feminine, that there was this river that we had stepped into, and we both felt like we weren't good enough in many ways to be called into the river. And yet we said yes anyway, because we just, there was no other way for us there was no other clear direction. Mm-hmm. And I had never experienced that balance before meeting Howard. I had been in many indigenous and sacred ceremonial environments where there was just a man. Usually there were some women in my life who were medicine carriers, but usually running the ceremony, it was a man. And they were, many of them were really beautiful and powerful healers and teachers and guides, but it never felt really balanced. And that was, and has been, and continues to be a beautiful place of teaching and inquiry, both in the work that we do and also in our own awakening and healing. Because we all carry masculine and feminine within us. And then when we come together with another, this is very Kabbalistic, but it's also Native American, that when I come together with a man or a woman, we are bringing the four directions together, because I am bringing two of the balance and you are bringing two of the balance. And together we are bringing the four. And that is the four directions. So we're bringing it all together. And ultimately, we're bringing it together as universal essence, as one. But there's something about that coming together in union of relationship and community that enhances the experience in a way that I had not experienced before, meeting Howard and also meeting this medicine. So
that's really beautifully said. You do a wonderful job of integrating like your experience in a lot of different ways into the work that you do. I like this idea of balance that you bring up too. And I think it's something that in some of the other models of like psychedelic practice and healing, we don't always, like you mentioned, we don't really see that in some ways. And I think it's a great model to consider. And I know like thinking about like the MAPS protocol, like they usually have a male and a female, therapist involved in that practice. But I think it warrants more attention to it when creating other types of practices, or what other types of practices can look outside, especially outside of the medical model, which is something that I'm personally like really big on looking at, because my dissertation looked at transformative psychedelic experiences at music festivals. Clearly not a medical setting, right? So it's really fascinating to see how your experiences and how your journeys have brought you together in a way to create a balance in providing and facilitating for others. So I really appreciate that perspective that you can offer. And I think it gives our listeners something to think about when they want to think about how they envision themselves working in the psychedelic field and how they can take parts of that and essentially integrate it into the work that they want to create for this themselves. Speaking of integration, I know that before we started recording, integration is a really big piece of your whole story and the work that you do. So I want to give you some space to talk about integration and what that means and why it's important and how it plays into everything.
When I first came to this work, the people that I was working with, that I was doing ceremony with, really didn't have much in the way of integration. It's, hi, we're doing this thing. See you next time. And somehow I wound up being the one that a lot of people would call to talk about their experience. I had already had significant psychedelic experience with another facilitator, doing soma for healing, ancient Hindu medicine. And he was all about integration. You would meet with him several sessions before, and then you would meet with him for as many sessions afterward as you needed to really milk the experience. So he was the first one that kind of showed me a framework to support people to get the most out of their experience. And so it was natural for me to step into that. And maybe that's one of the gifts that I just bring, is the ability to help people untangle the knots in their head, because it took me such a long time to untangle the knots in my head. It was very knotty up here. I mean, I went to treatment. I came out and was introduced to psychedelics at almost 41 years old. I was terrified of them. I'm 62. I was I was privy to the war on drugs. So I had a head full of, these things are dangerous. They're going to wreck your DNA. You're going to wind up having children with three arms. Stay away. All of that story. But then after I got sober, I was introduced to this whole possibility that they were healing. And so what I learned from that is that the most important part of the experience is not the experience. It's actually learning what it means for you. And over the years, we have seen so many people going from ceremony to experience. They're going this week to this and next week to that. And then they're doing watching, and then they're doing ayahuasca, and they're doing it again. And then they're doing 5-MeO and another workshop and another retreat, but not ever slowing down to take it in. And I see them getting further and further off the ground. And so what we have really been committed to is make sure that people get everything that they can get from their experience, because it's not how much you do them. I mean, Alan Watts said this in a very famous talk. He said, once you get the message of psychedelics, you can hang up the phone, because now you need to do the work with the message more than you need to continue to do more psychedelics, because they're not about going out to see the lights and colors. Or as we like to say, this isn't for tripping the light, fantastic. This is for going in and doing some deep excavating and soul healing, or really about deconstructing this whole thing up here that we believe is us.
Well, and I think one of the things that you were talking about, Howard, and especially about integration, often what we've seen and what I've seen is, including myself, when we first do the medicine, for many people, it opens the gates and the trauma is revealed, or the pain or the suffering or the disillusionment. And I'm ready to go in deeper, dive in and do more work, because now I have the space to do it. So that's not necessarily what we're talking about. It's more this, an excuse. Instead of doing the work, I'm going to go let the medicine shake it out of me. And one of the things that we have found is that there are not a lot of tools being shared or accessible. And they're out there, but just in our domain of working, that assist and facilitate reaping the benefits of the gifts that are given, and how to go back into the world of conditioned thinking when we've had a taste of the unconditioned consciousness, that I taste it and I say, oh yes, I'm home. This is what I am. But then I go back into my relationships or my work or my culture, and maybe one or two or none of them are reflecting back unconditioned consciousness, except maybe nature. and so then it's easy to go back asleep and to get kind of caught up in the grind of life, paying the bills, doing our jobs. keeping up, putting gas in our car, et cetera. And how do I stop that assembly line of living? And so integration is this day-to-day, truly moment-to-moment, breath-to-breath practice, if you will, or approach or awareness of awareness in everyday life. That when I'm washing dishes, that is integration. When I'm picking up my child and saying hello to his teacher, that's integration. How I'm being in the world, how I'm being aware of my reactivity or my negative thoughts, or how do I face them, the thoughts and my reactivity, and what do I do with it? And how do I perhaps make another choice of responding instead of reacting and perpetuating the false self that's caused all of this suffering in my life in the first place? So I look back now, it wasn't religion that was the source of my depression. It wasn't my parents, not to point at my parents, they're lovely people, or you know, the church, or even my culture. It's the beliefs that drive those ideas and ways of being an image and identity. And that is what the medicine continues to point to, is shining a light on what is this attachment and what is this a way of being connected to transcendent and human. And that is an, that's called, I like to call this, I like to call integration the life work. It's not like, oh, now I'm done with integration. Okay. It's just this ongoing practice. Mm-hmm. And we're really passionate about it because of what we're learning in our own personal lives and in the lives of our community members, and how we want to reach out beyond just our community to support integration in other spaces.
Let me add something.
Go ahead.
I think what we're really looking at when we're saying integration is we're taking this incredibly spiritual experience, even though it may be challenging, it may be all excavating that spiritual experience with the world of day-to-day life, which has been referred to as the profane versus the divine. Well, actually, the fact is, when you really look at integration, it's about recognizing that this is a divine spiritual experience in life. And with the perspectives and new awarenesses and awakenings that we get during that experience and the connection to our authentic essence, to bring that here is what we're integrating, to integrate the divine, our authentic divine nature, into this world. Mm. That's what we're really, in some ways, integrating, is that taking the spiritual from over there and the mundane over here and going, no, it's all spiritual. Don't let it be mundane, because this is an amazing experience to be here.
We like to say, Gabby, that life is psychedelic. Truly, that when we think about it, that I'm not making my heart beat, I'm not telling my lungs to breathe, I'm not causing the blood to flow through my body, I'm not causing the sun to rise, and yet the essence of me, of you, is, that's pretty psychedelic when we think about it, or when we stop and pause and be with that reality. That's mind-blowing in the best of ways. And I don't need to keep going back to the medicine to awaken to that. But what I do need to do is to continue to cultivate that awareness. And sometimes I need plant medicine to help me awaken when I have forgotten. So there's a place for it all.
Yes. I'm just going to say yes. there's just so much in there. First, the Alan Watts quote, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I think it's always interesting to hear how people interpret that, right? Because a lot of people have this idea of like, oh, okay, you got the message, hang up the phone, you're done, you don't have to pick it up again. But you know, you bring it back around where it's like, yeah, you can hang up the phone so that you can, as we speak about integration, but kind of bring the divine into our everyday life and look for it and be with it and be in those moments and live in it. But then in those moments where you need a reminder of it, you can pick up the phone again. It's not like you hang up the phone forever. Like, it's a tool that you can go back to, but, you know, take that time to find the divine in your everyday, to live in those moments and look for it and find in it and be in it, you know? So I like that, because I think sometimes I hear people talk about that particular Alan Watts quote with this idea that it's an end all be all. You got the message, you hang it up, you're done, you moved on. If anything, our lives are dynamic and they're always changing and we're always going to be going through something. And, you know, we can always probably pinpoint a time where it's like, okay, especially like if you think about all kinds of different life moments, you know, I think about transitional periods in life of, you know, losing a parent or having a child or, you know, even graduating from college and being like, where do I go with my life right now? You know, those types of really big transitional pieces in life, getting married, those types of things. They're all moments where you're like, okay, this is a new divine moment almost in life. How do I find the divine in it? And sometimes going back to that plant medicine, at least in my experience, has been, you know, useful in helping me to kind of see it again and then try to integrate it into everyday life. So I really appreciate this perspective on that quote and on this idea of integration that you guys provide, because I think it's really beautiful. And I know in my experiences and in my, especially in my research on like more recreational psychedelic use, it is common to see people just like go in. And one of the findings from my research that I pull out is like, what makes transformative experiences transformative for people is that they do take that time to integrate and make change in their life and figure out how to take that divine moment and integrate it into their everyday world. And that's where transformation happens. But without that, it doesn't happen. So it's super instrumental.
Yes. And we've lost, I believe, in a larger collective sense, we've lost the sense of place and the sacred in the everyday. We've lost the stories that connect us to the, you know, connecting us beyond our mind. The winter solstice doesn't happen and then it's over. It happens, and there's other equinoxes and solstices in between, and then you come back around to the winter solstice so we can look to nature. It's not winter solstice happened, hang up the phone. It's winter solstice happened, and we have time to integrate the solstice and plant those seeds. And then we begin to see the beginning of those seeds birthing in spring. And then we benefit the harvest of that in summer. And then we see it dying off, and it's back again to hibernation and contemplation and listening. And when we leave a ceremonial, sacred, indigenous relationship path, exposure, and we come back into a place where that's not mirrored or met with grounding, wisdom, guidance, discernment, it's understandable that you or I would want to go back and have another ceremony, because it's that deep connection and belonging and feeling that I am enough as I am in the essence of me that's lacking. And we seek it in so many different ways, as many of those who are listening may have experienced. And well, if it's success or it's money in my bank account or it's the person I'm with or the car I'm driving or the accomplishments I've made, wait, that didn't do it for me. You know, just to reference the recent passing of Matthew Perry, like someone who was as famous and well-known and successful in a very beloved environment, show. And yet he had such deep suffering and did his best to come through. But even then we look at that and say, but we loved him so much, or he was so successful. And yet that wasn't the answer. And so when we come out of a sacred ceremony specifically, which is in the work that we do, we don't work in it in plants in recreational way. We work with them in a ceremonial context, that when we leave that place, it's not to be living in everyday ceremony either, but it's also to bring the threads from the ceremony and weave them into my daily life and acknowledge and notice the ceremony of the sacred of the day-to-day life too, Now I'm bringing it in and weaving. Now I'm collaborating with life. Now I'm participating, not just what's life doing to me or what are the plants going to give me. I'm engaging in a way that is inviting me to participate and also offer my life's energy to life. That's a very different way of coming out of recreational use and ceremonial use of plant medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you bring up this term of coming out. And so I want to bring up the conversation of what it means for you guys essentially to come out, because you've been doing this work underground for a long time. And, you know, just relatively recently, have you been talking openly, more openly about it? So why now? And what is coming out about your work mean and look like, and why is it important?
Thank you for the question. The fact that psychedelics in this new wave are getting respectful examination as a real vehicle for healing and growth and transformation, and that now there's such widespread acceptance and growing. It's a mainstream conversation. You know, it's on the cover of magazines talking about psychedelics of all kinds, ayahuasca, MDMA, mushrooms. It's clear that there's a lot of people working with these substances on their own. And for what we've learned in our own transformational process and the people that we've been working with, we feel compelled to come out and say that there is a lot that one can do to continue to deepen their work and to integrate it. And we feel compelled to speak in a rational and sane way about their use, because ultimately they're not for going out there. They're for going in here and then coming back with treasure. And so really the journey for us is we've gone and we've come back with some treasure, and we're feeling compelled to leave breadcrumbs, leave notes for the people that come next. We actually got this message from a children's book we were reading to our son. At the end, it says, when you're ready to go, leave notes for those that come after you. And I just, tears started to run down my face. I went, right, that's what we're here to do, is to leave notes. You know, what would I tell my younger self? What would I share with someone who is just starting out in life? What would I want to teach my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old about how to approach life and culture and all the things that might confuse and or muddy the waters of why we're here? Because we weren't told when we got here that we were whole. We didn't get that message. It took me 40 years and slamming headfirst into the wall with addiction to come to plant medicine, to have the plants tell me, hey, Howard, you know, you have this belief from the time you were born that there's something wrong and there must be something wrong with you. And bless 12-step for saving my life. I'm internally grateful to it, but it passes on that same message that you're still broken, but here's why. And the plants were like, you never were broken, Howard. What's broken is your thinker. You have bad software in a perfectly good system. And I'm like, wow, that message is so important. For people who believe, really believe that there's something so fundamentally wrong with them that they're never going to be okay here. And I was one of them. And you know, the funny thing is, I have not met a single person from very wealthy, high-end brain surgeons and CEOs to body workers and people who are still trying to figure out what they want to do for a living. The same thing. There's something wrong with me. And I worked at a treatment center for a year after I got sober. I saw it in the up close and personal in an area where people were paying a lot of money, 5, 6, 7 figures to go to a treatment center. And they had everything from my perspective. I'm like, you got everything. The ends are meeting like crazy for you. What could possibly be wrong? But it wasn't about any of that, because none of that improved the sense of self for long. So I'm worth $10 million. Okay, I don't feel that's enough. So I'm going to be worth $100 million. Well, guess what? That's not enough. So do I go for the billion, or do I wind up, you know, and eventually we either die from this thing, this pursuit of something outside of us to become whole, or we get wise. And that's one of the other reasons why we're talking about integration, is because our culture has taught us that something at some future time that we can buy, achieve, or be awarded is going to make me more than I am today, and then I will arrive and I'll be whole. And that's an illusion, because the fact is there is no future, and nothing of this world is going to make you more magnificent than you were when you got here. Hold a baby and argue that point. You hold this incredible magnificence. Now, how does that become so dumbed down and so encumbered by suffering? It's not because it's the child's destiny. It's because of the culture and the family dynamic and the dysfunctional beliefs that tell us that somehow tomorrow will be more if we just find it. And I think that's what drives people to continue to chase ceremony after ceremony. Not that they shouldn't. If you're really hitting against the wall, you know the call and you'll go back. But to just continue to hammer at that rather than to slow down and go, what did I just get from that? It's one of the greatest messages I got was slow down. And I had to hear that message maybe 5 or 10 times at least before I actually recognized that I had to choose that. I had to choose to start intercepting my thinking in a whole new way that would drive me to be frantic about whatever.
Well, and I think just to insert something, Gabby, about why we decided to come out and speak, it was actually during COVID, and we slowed down and everybody slowed down. We stopped traveling. We didn't leave our house really for a number of months. I mean, we went outside, but we didn't leave our neighborhood. And it really was this, for us, a beautiful gift of a pause. And talk about integration. We took the time to slow down and integrate not only our facilitation work, but also our personal work in terms of, if we never did this ceremonial work again, what would we do? Where would we be, so to speak? And we immediately jumped online and started teaching courses within our community. And that became the beginning of the seed being planted. And a number of people in our community and in the courses were reflecting back saying, this course or this work we're doing together, workshopping integration, workshopping awareness, is as powerful, some even said more, quote unquote, powerful than the medicine ceremony, because we're actually talking about it, integrating it, awakening to it, applying it in our lives, then coming back together. And we started to see how working together within community, hearing one another, sharing our own stories, asking questions, is such powerful medicine. And that really inspired us to explore and speak out. And we started doing podcasts in 2020 and 21 and just started exploring what was this. And that was also the seeds of this interview that we did about our album that we made. It was a ceremonial music album during COVID that we were inspired to make because we said, hey, the world is going a little bit crazy here. What do we do when that happens in ceremony? We sing. So we said, hey, let's sing and make an album. And this friend of ours interviewed us about the album, and it turned into 22 hours of conversations that is now the transcripts of our book. So the way in which we have been living and working with the plants is really just this organic flow of listening and following and asking questions. And is this how we want to show up? Is this what we want to do? And each time that we've come up to a new transition, we've often said yes or yes, but we've said yes. And this is where we're at right now is okay, yes, we're here to share what we're learning and what we've learned, because we want to leave, as Howard mentioned, these notes for others and to support others who are either new to the space or are feeling called to help and be of service to others and provide a place for them to feel supported. And we're exploring right now how to, we're exploring creating a course and a certification course for people who want to deepen an integration and get coaching support around that. That's a new space for us, but our community is asking for it, and we're listening and we're saying, yes, okay. And so it's dynamic. And I think being open to adapting to life is so healthy and essential to evolution and growth. Kind of going back to that Alan Watts comment, like there's no end of the period. It's just the end of the sentence. There's always another paragraph or another page of the story. And it might be the end of the sentence for the moment, but then there's a whole nother chapter. And sometimes we find ourselves in the empty page between each chapter, but that doesn't mean that there's not more story to tell or live or experience. So that might be a long answer to your question, but it's definitely something that we are saying yes to and learning what that yes is, even in the midst of saying yes right now.
No, I think that's perfect. And I think you speak to this idea of kind of being dynamic and flexible and kind of going with things and shaping them as they go is really reflective of what integration itself is, you know? So I think that was perfectly said. It was great. I'm curious to know a little bit more about, I know you have a website, a book, and I believe you're coming out with a podcast too. So, and I feel like these are all kind of pieces of this integration and kind of coming out and this new chapter essentially that you guys are literally forming. So, where are those projects and when can we expect to see them and kind of get involved in engaging with them?
Well, our website is launched. So that's one of the trifecta you mentioned just recently too, which we're super excited about. It's inaandhoward.com. And we are also in that process of the website. We've created an institute for the integration of psychedelics and consciousness. So we have courses that we've created, and there will be more ongoing, not only courses that will come from us, but also we've created an institute so that we can start to invite other teachers in the psychedelic space and in the plant medicine space to share their learning and their information and experience and to support those both within our community and beyond who have perspectives that we want to support. And then we also, as I mentioned, we have a book coming out. We're in the process of writing and editing that right now. And we're hoping that that's going to come out in sometime in 2024. And it's going to be about not only integration, but also some of our journey. And we've interviewed other people about their journey and transformation process and integration. And then our podcast is called The Integration Conversation. And it's really about exploring, of course, integration, but through the lens of personal experiences of participants and their transformation, their struggle, what they came up against, how they came to medicine. Just sharing more of a personal direct experience is so healing. Sharing our stories is so healing. And that is a very strong thread, especially in the Indigenous circles that I was privileged and honored to listen in and walk with, was community and sharing stories. Those are two powerful, powerful pieces that I believe we don't share as much or in the same way. I think somehow social media has kind of stepped in as this virtual community and virtual storytelling, but it's through so many filters, pun intended, literal and virtual filters. And we're not making that physical contact or eye-to-eye contact. It's behind a keyboard or it's hidden. And we need to hear from one another and we need to share and we need to reach out and be able to touch community. And so those three areas for us, our website and our institute and courses and our book and podcast, et cetera. Those are all ways in which we're saying we're here and sharing our story and the stories of others and to share support for others and also to be a voice within the community of psychedelics and plant medicine and consciousness.
Perfect. And I will be sure to include the link to your website in the show notes so that our listeners can check that out and connect with you through that. And I can also share the link for like your podcast. And I know the book's not ready, but whenever it is, like, feel free to send that over. We can post it on the Psychedelic Grad community page. We can share it in our newsletter so that our community can keep up to date and check that out when that's available too. Something I really want to highlight is you bring up community and connection and being able to talk about experience and how important that is and how it's kind of part of this this therapeutic process in a way. And I totally recognize that in the academic community, in like the ceremonial space, like recreational use of psychedelics is very different than ceremonial practice. But it's also really interesting to me that you bring that up, because it's one of the major findings that came from my study, is this essential role. Because it's just so fascinating with music festivals, people just kind of come together. Like, I literally just got back from a music festival like 3 days ago. But people come together in these spontaneous moments and they build community. And within those moments, they have these sometimes really transformational, very impactful experiences. And what I found in my research is that, you know, sometimes it's the end of the night or it's the next morning and people wake up and they're like, hey, like, I need to sit down and talk to somebody about this. And they sit there and they talk about, you know, the experience they had the night before, and they recollect trauma that they went through, or, you know, and they process all of these things. And it really does highlight what you guys are trying to do, is that you're trying to create an outlet to create community, face-to-face community too. Like you said, virtual communities are important and stuff, but that face-to-face connection, to be able to sit down with someone and be able to look them in the eye and say, this is what happened to me, can you help me sit here and process it, is so powerful. And I think when we think about some other settings of psychedelic use, like, I feel like that's, I guess from my perspective, from what I understand with like the more medicalized model, like, we're not necessarily seeing that community-based being built, but it's, and I know for me, it's something I'd like to see more in that setting, but I think it's also pertinent to recognize that it comes from that ceremonial practice, right? Honestly, everything that we're seeing within the medical field with psychedelics somehow stems from those ceremonial practices. And I don't think it's given enough credit, in my opinion. So I appreciate that you bring it up, because it's something that is pertinent, and it's something that I think it needs to continue to be integrated into other kind of practices and settings of psychedelic use and psychedelic, especially therapeutic types of settings.
I think one of the challenges for the traditional therapeutic model is the nature of relationship and the separation that exists between the participant or the patient, client, and the facilitator or the doctor, therapist. Mm-hmm. The nature of that relationship is not intimate in both ways. You know, it's only intimate in one way, which continues to maintain a bit of a wall between the person who's experiencing and needing to speak about this and the person who is facilitating. See, I don't have that restriction. I can share my own life experience with one of the participants, my own ceremonial experience, to help highlight or illuminate where I'm suggesting a reframe of what their experience might mean for them. Whereas that, the nature of the relationship in the medicalized model doesn't give that. It also doesn't give a setting that is both comfortable, grounded, and spiritually intentional. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to make that generalization that there aren't any that are doing it, but I think that makes a big difference over having a nice, comfy, overstuffed chair in a lovely appointed office, but actually even a simple darkened space where there's an intentional altar, a candle, some sage burning, some prayer, intention, connecting with the great mystery. It doesn't have to be a, quote, particularly religious, because often that word is considered to be synonymous, spiritual and religious, but they aren't. I know many very religious people who have not a spiritual thread to them. Mm-hmm. And I know many, many deeply spiritual people who have walked away from religion. It's, they're not synonymous. Not to say that there aren't deeply spiritual religious people. There are many, probably more than there aren't. But the container, to be a spiritual, safe container where there is a level of connectivity between the participant and the practitioner that removes as many barriers as possible. You know, no pedestal for the practitioner versus the participant, because we want them to feel like they can share anything and that we can share anything as well. You know, one thing that connects more, and this is something I've noticed over many years of going to all kinds of events and organizations for healing, is that it's all looking good. I can't connect. You know, when I share the fact that I know your pain, I may not know your particular pain, but I know my particular pain, and I can relate to your pain through my pain, and here's my pain. That makes a bond instantly. You know, a connection.
Trust.
Openness. Oh, you mean you've suffered too? It's no different than in a 12-step meeting when they say, you know, listen to somebody who's got a message of depth and weight that you can relate to and then connect with them. It's that same connectivity. And I don't know that the medical model can't do that for psychedelic practitioners, because it could. You know, it's not, the laws are still being framed for most of this, that even in states that haven't yet even decided they want to do this. So it's all so new, you know, as far as the medicalization of it. But I only think that the resistance from practitioners to the medicalization of it is not understanding how it can be done in a very sacred and intentional way, because they're so used to seeing what the medical model is, which is clinical, you know. As the setting for Rick Strassman in DMT, the spirit molecule, they had to do these in hospitals where they're laying people down in a hospital bed with all the equipment going and the beep, beep, and the boop, boop, and they're, you know, taking intravenous DMT and trying to have an experience. You know, maybe that would have been better in a nice, chill room. But for a medical study, there are certain parameters that must be met. So I think the medicalization of it is going to be an evolutionary process, you know. I'm sure the way it begins is not going to be the way it's done 5 or 10 years down the road. And perhaps they may realize that it cannot be done that way, and it needs to be done in a different kind of a container with a different kind of a relationship between participant and practitioner. And I've rambled on a bit.
No, I think that's really important. Bringing up that relationship that you have, because that really does influence, like, even if, you know, like, even if you just think about just general therapy, like, how open do people feel with just a general therapist when you don't really feel like you have a connection with them? So how can you expect that to be different in when you introduce psychedelics into that equation too? So I think that's a really important point.
Well, and one of the experiences that many participants have that come when they begin this work is they arrive and they're with people they've never met before, and they leave. I don't want to say everybody's best friends, but there is something about stepping into an environment where all our resistances are called into the light and also called into an opportunity to let them go, and where we are brought to our vulnerability very quickly, that we're not saying, oh, hi, Gabby, what do you do for a living? Where do you live? Who have you been with? We don't ask those questions unless someone wants to share those. But I'm even saying this in a group environment. We're really coming down to immediately walking in the door, basically sitting down and saying, this is the deepest searching of my soul. How often do we connect with one another in that way? And when we do, we realize we're all sitting in this circle as human beings with a transcendent essence, longing for union, longing for wholeness. And that vulnerability creates such a powerful, powerful environment and dynamic for healing. Because then it's not like Howard and I are the practitioners, facilitators. Like, we are also in the circle. There is no, not to sound cliche, but there's no beginning or end of a circle. We are all in it. All equal. No one is superior or inferior. As facilitators, we may have a little bit more experience down the road, just like a therapist or a medical doctor. But one of the things I think that differentiates that is that we are very transparent in our own evolution and our own experience that I am not ashamed or afraid to share. Hey, I'm afraid right now. Mm-hmm. Or I'm feeling some nervousness, even though I've done this many, many times. Yeah, there's a little bit of, wow, we're stepping into the great mystery. How can I ever be completely, I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, on one level, my essence is that. And on the other level, my humanity is saying, whoa. So there's nothing wrong with sharing that. And that doesn't make me less of a practitioner by doing so. And I don't do that to pretend or make a false sense of connectivity, but it's just this immediate connection that occurs. And then we do all feel our connection as if we've known each other forever, because we have, in the sense that the essence of what we all are is that union, is the truth of life. And so when I'm focused on these other specifics of my personal narrative, that's when the separation occurs. And ultimately, as we're witnessing, to take it to the extreme, that's when war occurs. And so we can bring these threads back to connect, not only with one another, but first we connect, we come home. And that communion within community is so essential. We saw it during COVID on Zoom, of all places. And people were crying and sharing and laughing and being expressive and feeling so supportive, so supported. And it's possible. It's possible to do that both in person and in an intentional gathering, whether it's online or not. And I think there's a strong need for that more and more, now more than ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to speak to what Howard said, I'm really hoping that we do see changes within the medical model to adapt more of these things. And I, like you had mentioned, like, I hope it looks a lot different down the road than what it does now. And it does integrate a lot of what we see and what we're starting to learn and know from other types of settings with psychedelic practices.
And Gabby, I just want to say one last thing about that. One of the most powerful experiences for me about this process of working with plant medicine is that when we started, and of course Howard did have, and I did too, in different settings, experience with guides and teachers, but ultimately it's been the plants that have taught us. And now we're seeing these things come out with maps about what to look for and how to integrate. In existence when we were working with the medicine, and the plants were teaching all of this, that we didn't start out doing our work the way that we say do it now, that was our own evolution of learning and a container and a context and a setting. But it's funny, some people will come now and say, well, MAP said, so I'm going to ask you all these questions, which that wasn't going on. We would just address those without being asked them, because we knew and we were shown through the course of learning from plants and in, you know, other more, the social structures that we're in, we'll say, well, like Howard was mentioning, you know, like, well, it has to be going through these different filters and these different procedures. That's been an interesting dance for us, is that we've been learning from the plants, and how do you communicate that without, you know, if I had heard that before I had done medicine, I would have thought like, that sounds a little crazy. Mm-hmm. But it's actually the greatest university of life of all for me is this university, the university of the plants, and how they teach and actually guide us to create the context and the setting if we're listening and paying attention. So I think with the medical field and the plant medicine spaces, there's so much to be shared and heard and learned from one another in a very dynamic way that's happening and can continue to happen.
Yes, I love so much that you said that, because I don't remember if I really talked about it much on my podcast. I don't think I really mentioned it much on the Psychedelic Studio podcast, but I was, a lot of what came out of my research and how I wrote about things for my dissertation and even just some of the major findings, a lot of it came to me from having psychedelic experiences while doing research. And of course, like, I couldn't really come out about that at the time, because like then people question the validity of like your research and stuff, but like it truly were these moments where like the medicine was teaching me and showing me like, hey, this is what you need to see. And I remember a very particular mushroom experience that I have where I literally was like, I talked to the mushroom god, like this happened. Like he held my hand and he walked me through this experience and he showed me all these things and he taught me all these things. Like I literally was, it was just the most, it was like one of the first like real mushroom experiences that I had. And I remember being like, the spirit of the mushroom is like, you know, like that's, you know, that was the experience. Like, you know, he showed me and he taught me and it was just, I just remember it being so, it's still so profound to me, even though it was like a couple years ago at this point. And it's just, it's such a teacher. Like just to reiterate, like it just teaches, it is the plant itself that is teaching us, you know? Yeah. And it's just, honestly, I'm sorry. It's just so beautiful to think about it. And it makes me feel like, you know, like, cause it like years ago, if someone would have told me that, like you said, I would have been like, okay, there's something wrong with me, but no, like those experiences are authentic and they're true and they are enlightening to us. And the only way honestly to understand it is to experience it.
I think Timothy Leary said this quite a long time ago. He said, when asked the question, can psychedelics cause a psychotic break? And he said, LSD only causes psychotic breaks in people who have never taken them. And most people had to chew on that for a second. And what he was saying is every one of these people that's talking about LSD in that way has never taken it. So that's why they don't know. They're making a very, very, very assertive opinion with no evidence. Mm-hmm. And that is part of what causes conflict in our culture to begin with, is opinion without evidence. And you can take that in any across human history and recognize that our greatest wars have been fought over just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why I loved studying anthropology so much, was being able to, even though I can never fully understand someone's experience, being able to recognize that people have different experience. And just because it's different doesn't mean that it's wrong or it's right or it's better or it's worse. It's just that it is different. And that was literally like when I did teach anthropology when I was a PhD student, literally that was like what I wanted my students to walk away with, was just recognizing like we can have different experiences, we can have different identities, we can be different beings, and we can recognize that difference without conflict.
Yeah, we can celebrate the differences. A diamond wouldn't be so beautiful without all the facets that reflect the different light, you know, from the different angles. I mean, there's so much homogenization that happens in culture and corporate culture and religious culture and political culture, all, you know, and that's wanting to frame and hone and control and direct. And nature is not like that. You know, mm-hmm. the volcano that's erupting in Hawaii is, you know, impacting us no matter where we are on the planet. And it's awakening something in us, or whatever it is, it's an invitation to look, to notice, to grow and evolve, just as weather patterns or social experiences, suffering, whatever it is. And the plants, really, it was such a beautiful story that you shared. And thank you for sharing that about your mushroom experience. And, you know, the plants are here to not only communicate with us, but they're also here to open the door. You know that to be true, your experience, because you are that mushroom speaking to yourself. You are that. It's the nature of essence of life that's bubbling up and coming forward and saying, hey, Gabby, look at this. And this kind of circles back to what we were talking about in the beginning of this conversation, which is, it's not that you now need to do more mushrooms. It's that you can deepen that awareness in the awakening that you had in the experience and in the quote conversation with the mushroom, that it's really this engagement with life through nature, through awakening, through observation, through our senses. And that's what these plants are doing. They're saying, hey, like you just said, Gabby, there's so many different ways to, as Rumi says, to kneel and kiss the ground. So right now there's like 8 billion human ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And that's not including all the animals and the insects and the birds and the fish and the mammals of the sea. So how many more billions and billions and billions of perspectives of sentient beings are there? And just because we have an experience, like you said, doesn't make it right or wrong, better or worse. And that's even for Howard and I to be sharing and communicating. We're just one facet in the myriad of facets. And yet we all benefit from listening to, whether it's a mushroom or a combination of plants or from another human being or the wind or a deer or a river, that we all benefit so greatly just by stopping and pausing and listening. And then how we incorporate that and integrate that into our lives, that's the practice. That's why we're here, is to awaken. And how we do that is different. We always say the medicine is for everyone and the medicine also isn't for everyone. And that's okay. It was and continues to be such a powerful modality for me in my life. And I also recognize that there are other powerful modalities and useful practices that have been here thousands, not hundreds of thousands of years or more. And right now, these plants and these different practices are coming forward since they kind of went down underground again after the 60s and 70s. They're coming back in a powerful way because we need it. We need their help. We need the help of our elders through nature to remind us and to help us get back on the path of connectivity and wholeness.
Because ultimately the message that we get is we're being reminded that our nature is nature. We're neither above it nor below it. We're intimately, infinitely interdependent and interconnected with everything here in existence. And that our suffering as human beings is because we're such a young species. We have convinced ourselves that this earth is here to serve us. And the plants are reminding us, actually, it's here for all of life. And it's here for all of life to thrive. This abundant wellspring of giving that is planet Earth, that makes everything that all of life needs, from sunlight, for heaven's sakes. How magical is that? And it's here for all of us. And when we learn how to share that, recognizing that we all have the right to be here and have our needs met by this great mystery of creation because we're here. It's not because we were born wealthy or we're famous or we're white or we're not. Or everything here has the right to live interdependently and interconnectedly as it was intended. And all of it works in balance. The good orderly direction about how this all works on such a on the fundamental level is so simple, it's almost ridiculous to not know that there's some intelligence, not above it, in it, underneath it, or as they say in Kabbalah, cloaked by physical reality is the essence of the great mystery of which each of us is just a pinpoint of light, or we are the infinite consciousness of the great mystery expressed as a point of awareness having a human experience. Yeah. And that refers to everything here. And when we really internalize that, we don't kill each other. We don't judge each other. We do the one thing that we are here to do, which is love it all. Even when it isn't pretty, because this is what is. It's here to challenge us to awaken. Mm-hmm. It's not here to make our dreams come true. We do that when we're fully living in our essence, when we're fully living authentically. That's when we bring the totality of what we're here to bring. And that's what all this is. All of us are this wellspring of brilliance that is uniquely the creation that you bring to this world, or I bring to this world. It wasn't so that we could make enough money to buy the house where we want to have it. Now that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have enough resources to make all our choices by preference. Everyone should, but that's not the reason why we're here. This is why we're here, to connect and support each other to enjoy this experience.
I got so excited when you were talking because I was like, I could feel it. I knew it. I can embody what you were saying as someone who has experienced that within like my own psychedelic experiences, but it also goes back to that idea of integration, of taking the divine from those experiences and integrating it into everyday life. Like it just perfectly brings it all back around, and it just makes me so excited because I can like feel it, you know?
Because you are it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's exciting.
It is.
It's enlivening. It's the aliveness of life within you, within me, within what Howard's saying and sharing, within your inner truth. Yeah. Saying yes.
Yes. And honestly, like oddly enough, I didn't realize how badly I needed to hear it in this moment, if you want the truth, as someone like I just started I graduated with my PhD, just started a new job. Great job. Great. Like it's a rewarding job, you know? But at the same time, like it's easy to get caught up in those mundane things, and it's easy to lose sight of, you know, looking for the divine in the everyday. And so having this conversation and hearing it, you know, and getting excited and feeling awakened by it all over again makes me feel so much better about my life right now. Not that I was feeling bad about it, but it just like reawakens me. It gives me a little bit of life, which is really refreshing. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So a few things that I do want to touch on. I know we're all different points in our life, but sometimes we feel lost. We don't know what we're doing. And you have both spoken to different types of experiences that you've had along the way, but you've also mentioned, Howard, you recently received your PhD in metaphysical humanistic science, right? And Ina, you have a master's in indigenous science. So I'm curious to kind of hear about how those, I guess we can call them more formal kind of educational experiences play into the work that you do, and how that's a little bit different from the more experiential types of learning that you've had along the way.
I think it's interesting because both of our higher education bookends, I got my master's degree and then went on these journeys, and Howard just got his PhD sort of, I don't want to say at the end, but
after 22 years.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we're going to have different perspectives and reasons what was calling to us. I'll just share that when I went to go get my master's degree, I got it from Naropa University, and they had a Boulder campus, but they also had a Berkeley campus. And I went to the Berkeley campus. And ironically, my master's degree was all the residencies were done in Hawaii. So what a gift that was. But mine was an unconventional degree program that I was learning from indigenous elders from all over the world. Traditional knowledge keepers were teaching us through our ceremonial practices. They said no note-taking, no recording of the classes. This was 21 years ago. They wanted us to learn from a different way than our Western education had taught us. They wanted us to learn from the traditional oral ways of teaching, the oral tradition rather. And so part of my intention for getting my master's degree was that I was so lost in my journey and exploration of my own inner seeking from leaving the church and leaving a structured belief system that I wanted something to ground. And I liken it to, I had been raised with the sky gods and I wanted to understand and connect with the earth. And my master's program really gave me that opportunity to connect with earth-based traditions, earth-based wisdom and ways of knowing, and went on all kinds of really powerful adventures with these elders in Hawaii, learning and experiencing traditional ceremonies and being exposed to practices that I would never have had access to. And part of the master's program was to pursue a lineage in our own family history that we would follow it all the way through pre-colonization, pre-imperialism, sort of tracking a lineage within us. And for many of us in America who are born in the United States, have many. So we were just to pick one. And at first I thought I was going to choose a native lineage that I have, which is Choctaw. I thought, oh, well, that's what this program is. I'm going to choose that lineage. But then I realized very early on, no, I need to pursue my European lineage because that needs addressing and that needs healing and acknowledgement and understanding. So I did. I chose my French lineage, which took me to a conference in France of Indigenous wisdom keepers, which landed me in France for 4 years walking the Red Road Native American way, which was crazy because it was like this circle. I followed my European roots to find my Indigenous roots to come back to my wholeness. So it was a beautiful program. It was open it opened 3 months before I arrived and it closed like 3 months after I finished my thesis. So it was definitely a window of opportunity and it set me definitely on my path. And I incorporate everything that I learned from that and more in the work that we do, for sure. Yeah.
I'd love to hear that. You know, after 22 years of working with plants, but also really almost 35 years of trying to detangle the knots in my head that kept me going in loops that I just couldn't get out of, you know, I wanted to apply to a degree program that it would allow me to use my life experience as much as the course material. And I found this program and it was magnificent because it allowed me to create the framework, or I should say, speak and write of the framework for the understanding of life, which is why it's metaphysical humanistic science. You know, metaphysics is more about the study of where we come from and where we're going and why this is all here, but not in the framework of a sky god context. You know, it allows, as humanistic science, no concept of a divine being necessarily out there. So that gave me the comfort of being able to speak to the framework that I had come to understand, which is, you know, whether you would call it pantheism or panpsychism, you know, is a good question, whether you want to say that everything is God or everything is consciousness, you know, because some people still like to hold on to that word. And even, you know, my primary degrees are science, hard science, computer engineering and physics. I went that way when my extremely religious upbringing didn't answer those questions. So I went back to that because the plants invited me back to this question of divinity, of creator, of great mystery, which, you know, science left me with, as a physicist, this big bang. Well, what was that? Was that consciousness deciding to finally create physicality? Who knows? But it certainly was an avenue where I could then explore and start to take what I had learned and all that had been sort of deconstructed in me about what I believed this was about and express that for a degree. So that felt very good to be in a program where it was so open to me actually sharing what I learned in the framework of the questions and answers and studies. But it was very different than my first my first degree, which was in a university with a canned program. Here's the courses you're going to take. Here's the teachers you're going to have. And these are the answers you're going to need to know how to give. Mm-hmm. It's very different. So there weren't any multiple choice questions or any true or false. This was all about writing. What did you learn here? Here's something that we're going to show you. How do you see this in the framework of what you're learning? It was magnificent. It was really an opportunity. And that's why it was so easy for me, because as you could tell, I like to talk and I like to write. And so it was a great opportunity for me to do what I love and really share what's been an incredibly transformational experience for me. I mean, I just celebrated my 62nd birthday in the summer. And I frankly have to tell you, I never thought I would make 30. And at the trajectory I was going on, I probably wouldn't have without a couple of interruptions in there for sanity being reintroduced. And fortunately, in 2002, it stuck. It stuck because the plants came along and said, hey, there doesn't need to be a third time around for this suffering. And I'm grateful they caught me in a big way. And so did 12-step. I'm not mad at them. I'm really grateful because that gave me a framework to start, you know, a place where there was some structure. And most importantly, people to connect with who could relate to my suffering and share their own. Because we can laugh about things in an AA meeting or in an NA meeting that you would never, ever, ever mention in polite company because it'd be horrifying. But yet there, it's something we can laugh about today, right? So that was a great start. But then the creative community that wasn't centered around the sense of being broken is what came later, you know, the sense of being whole to begin with. And that's why the plants called me out of there and started to really encourage us to create this community where, look, you're welcome because you're here, you want to be here, and you want to question these things that keep you sick and stuck. So that degree program was the perfect one because it didn't force me to fit into a framework of what they wanted from me. They had some very open questions that left a lot of breath for me to express and even get more clear by putting it on paper. While maybe 50% of it was lost, maybe not in the translation, as her reader once said, but still, it was transformational to speak it, write it, and then read it back and go, wow, that's where I've walked so far. It was by design, but it was by accident that I found it. It was by intention and by accident. It's the best thing I've ever done, actually.
That's incredible because when I think about my PhD program, I just want to cry sometimes. It was great. It was really great, but it was very, it was transformational in itself. Like, and actually with you speaking about it, it makes me realize how fortunate I was to be in the anthropology program that I was in. I mean, aside from the fact of just having faculty that were supportive of me doing psychedelic research, like, you know, just being grateful for that. But like you said, I didn't have tests with multiple choice or anything like that. No, it was writing. It was like, here's an idea. What do you think of it? What's, you know, critique it, play with it, run with it, you know, ask questions about it, all of that, like the freedom to explore. And being a part of a program and falling into anthropology in the way that I did, I really do recognize how grateful I am that I ended up on that path that very much led me to where I am here, you know, doing this podcast, doing psychedelic grad, speaking to you, and being able to have gratitude for landing where I was because of that program and the freedom that it provided me to do the research and ask the questions. And like you said, my program and the research that I ended up doing was very much as much as it was like an academic and theoretical journey into anthropology and psychedelics and all the fun stuff like that, it very much was an internal exploration of what am I doing here and what do these experiences mean to me? And it was actually, to bring it all back around, it was an integrative process for me of, you know, from the beginning of my journey until up until that point. So.
And, you know, two of the visionaries, early visionaries in psychedelics, were anthropologists, Terence McKenna and Jeremy Narby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a friend now who's going to study for a degree in anthropology because they intend to go down the jungle and study plants and write about it for a degree, which I think is incredible that that's even possible.
Yeah. It is. Anthropology is pretty cool. Not enough people know about it. And those who do, I think sometimes it's underappreciated what you can really do with it. Cause it's so much fun. It really is.
If you're studying about people or culture, you can study any aspect you want, which literally opens it to anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a great time writing my dissertation. I brought in sociology. I brought in physics. I brought in all kinds of stuff into anthropology. It was really beautiful and incredible and such an adventure. I highly recommend it. All right. I think we've really covered a lot of ground. We've talked about your experiences. We've talked about your several years of journeying and even your kind of, I would say, more formal education and all of the work that you're doing. I'm curious to talk about what you see for the future for the whole field of psychedelics, but also your role in it and what you're hoping for your future as Howard and Ina.
I think our intention is to bring what we've learned and how this work has transformed us and the simple tools that we have picked up along the way, and to share that, because we can certainly support far more people that way than we ever can holding small groups. And our intention is not to teach others to hold small groups. Our intention is to help those who are now graduating with licensure to facilitate, who don't really have any experience and might need a framework through which they can prepare somebody before, hold them during, and after, to get the most out of the experience. And I think that would be what we see our role, would be able to speak to that, share that, and to offer that. And also, we have some offerings on our site, which is about a self-study integration program, because there are, as you say, lots of people who are out there taking psychedelics at festivals and at home on their own. And if they had something that they could connect to, and then we also offer a community that they can join where we can actually have live workshop deconstructing their experiences as well. Because we feel that that's the most important part of it, not how or where they do them so much as what they do with what they got from them with psychedelics. Because I do believe that, you know, with rare exception, people that do have some particular mental or physical illnesses, you know, epilepsy, perhaps history of psychosis, possible traumatic brain injury, might not be safe for them to do psychedelics. But mushrooms and ayahuasca are pretty much safe for anybody who's medically and physically safe to do so. And about the worst thing that could happen is they could land on their ass after it and need some help and support, you know. But as far as it breaking their brain, well, first of all, you can't break the brain. And second of all, the brain is not them anyway. So as one of Ina's most wise teachers once said, a Western mind is a good thing to lose. So if somebody says to me during a journey, I think I'm losing my mind, great, keep going. You're almost there.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to predict the future, and even look what's happening right now in the world. And we just feel like we came out of COVID and stepping into, well, and other social, racial, you know, so many political tensions and polarizations and pain and suffering that we've been experiencing in all of our humanity, but really just speaking about the last few years and where we're at today. You know, I think it's constantly a deep listening for us, because I don't think since we've met, we've never really been like, okay, we're going to do this now. It's really been like, oh, here's the road. Let's walk down that. And then here's the river. Let's get in here. Okay, here's the mountain. Let's climb up there. And I think in this deep listening right now, we're really stepping into a season of, as Howard just mentioned, offering not only integrative support, but also ongoing support for other facilitators, and also participating in academic and research studies and bringing our anecdotal experience and knowledge to an environment to help support. I think one of the things that I've noticed when working with Howard before, it was like the lone wolf. And then I came to Howard and it was like the two. And then we had a son and it was the family. And then it was the community. And I think at this place, or I know in this place now, community is everything. Coming together with open hearts and compassion and empathy for one another, how we can meet together. We don't have to understand each other. We don't have to look like each other. We don't have to love like each other. We don't have to live like each other. But to give each other the honor and space to be here and honor where we all are and give that a voice and a breath and an acknowledgement. That is so much also what's underlying our integration drive or calling, is not just we're here to support integration, but also integration. What is that? In community, in and as nature, in family, in society, in arts, in music, in everything. That if we are not integrated within our surrounding, then we will stay isolated and closed down and lost in the technological, material world, and not be deepening into the heart and compassion and presence. So yes, we live in a material and technological world, but if we don't bring that heart, then we're not going to be able to evolve, is what I see. Mm-hmm. And so that passion is really what I think is driving us. What that looks like for our future, I don't know, but we have these structures in place that we're building and listening to. And I imagine a year from now, they might look different, or we might have more. Music is definitely continuing to be a part of our life. That's how we met, was in the music studio. And we have a number of albums that we have out now and that we're working on. And music is such a deep part of our ceremonial experience as well. And the sound is so healing, and the plants inform through the sound waves in such a profound way. So yeah, there's lots that is here to work with, and we just keep staying open to the possibility of what we don't know that we don't know.
That's perfect. I love that. And I can't wait to see where that path goes.
Thank you.
And speaking of music, is there any way that like our listeners can, where can we find your music? Because I want to hear it now.
Everywhere. You can find us on Spotify. You can find some of our music videos on YouTube. You can find us on Apple Music, virtually every streaming service. Look us up by Ina V and Howard Lip, or just look up Ina V and you'll find me tagging along.
And all our music's on our website too.
It is, yeah.
Okay, perfect. I will definitely include some links to those in the show notes. I know I'm going to check them out. I'm super excited. I'm always interested in, obviously, music festivals is a big part of my life. So music in general is a huge part of my life. And I'm always looking for new avenues and things to try and listen and check out and share.
Yeah, our album. Yeah, thank you for that. Our album, Sono Ceremonia, is our medicine ceremonial album. So we have other songs that we do and albums that we do, but that particular album, for people who are listening who want to connect more with plant medicine music, that one is.
And it's got a broad range. It's got some that would definitely be classified as EDM, mixed mm-hmm. in with some very mm-hmm. shamanic, mixed in with some acoustic, mixed in with some ancient instruments, mixed in with some me chanting in Hebrew. You know, it's a.
Yeah, some of the songs are traditional songs we've learned in the paths we've walked. And many of the songs, people might be surprised, were songs that we've written, but they sound ancient in nature. And that's because the plants definitely were inspiring us and informing us in that process. So, yeah, we love it. We're excited about it.
Oh, yes. Now I'm super excited to check that out and share that around for sure. Awesome. Yay. So you've given all kinds of pieces of advice and experience and all kinds of tidbits, but is there any other encouragement or last pieces of guidance or support that you want to offer our listeners as they try to maneuver out their journey into the psychedelic world?
I think it was the wisest thing that was ever told to me was, learn to pay attention, and including paying attention to where my mind is at. Pay attention to my thinking. Don't believe my thinking. If I do nothing more than pay attention to my breath, especially when I approach the journey and I'm in it, rather than trying to think my way through the experience or interpret it or narrate it, just breathe my way through it. I will do more to change my consciousness and stay in the center of the boat while it rocks, because psychedelics can get a little challenging. But if I can come back to my breath and recognize that whatever I'm having is an experience, not get caught up in the stories my mind might be saying about what it's seeing, I can definitely stay in the center. And to use that tool afterwards to help continue to see how my mind is really the thing that causes my suffering.
I don't know what else. No, that's beautiful. And I echo that. And I also just want to share, and you touched upon this, Gabby, that, you know, ceremonies that I've experienced 15, 20 years ago are continuing to inform me today, that it is, as I like to call it, each ceremony is one square of a mosaic. And if I'm hyper-focusing on the one square, that's all I see is one color. But if I back up and I look at it through a perspective of, as Howard was mentioning, through spaciousness, through observation, through breath, then I see that there's actually this beautiful mosaic that's being formed and cultivated, whether it's your first ceremony or your 100th or beyond or before 100. It doesn't matter how many you've done, that they each are informing, illuminating, and guiding. And to not make any major decisions right away after having an experience. We say no major life-changing decisions for 30 days, but that's only because it gives us time to land and ground and speak to people that we love and trust, who we can communicate and share our experiences with and get reflection back that is coming from a loving, trusted source. So I think suggestions are just, helpful. Go ahead.
The psychedelic experience that we have is constructed for us. It's not meant for somebody else. It's not really meant to be shared. And it's not really meant to be given to another person for them to tell me what it means, because that will actually freeze my ability to continue to interpret it. So if there's anything I can do is to hold on to that experience and let it teach me over time. If it doesn't make sense right at the moment, perfect. That's not supposed to. It's not supposed to. The teachings that change are everything that you thought you knew. Do not necessarily flip a switch in an instant. Sometimes the pachinko balls have to fall all the way through the machine before they can.
I think that's all very well said. And honestly, it makes me feel better about a recent experience that I had that I feel like I haven't like pulled the pieces out of quite yet. So it makes me feel like it's okay that I'm still processing it. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And other ceremonies that you experience or other journeys you go on may illuminate one's previous and give you insight, because you're not the same person now that you were then. So you couldn't perhaps see the insights then that you can now. And that's why they're alive. The spirit of the plants are alive. They're not just limited to the ingestion or the journey per se. It's tapping into an awakening within us, infinite consciousness. So there's no linear timeline there. So yes, there's infinite possibility to experience always with each journey.
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us today. My last question for you is, if any of our listeners want to connect and reach out to you, learn more from you, how can they contact you?
If they go to enanhoward.com, there will be a contact us form. They can just reach out that way. That's probably the easiest. Mm-hmm. I don't know if our phone number for the Institute is up there yet, but it will be.
And we're on social media platforms, so they can reach us that way too. But the best is
they're not terribly active yet, but we are monitoring them. So if someone reaches out either way, we'll see it.
Okay, perfect. And again, I'll make sure I put those links on the show notes, make it super easy and accessible for our listeners. And once again, thank you so much for joining me today. I feel spiritually like reawakened and just so, I don't know, feel so much better moving forward. Just so many beautiful insights and the genuineness and empathy. I can literally feel it radiate, even though we're like talking to each other through a screen and through like a call. But thank you so much for everything, for offering your experiences, for sharing and being open and vulnerable about the things that you learned and your challenges and the things that you've overcome, and sharing that with myself and all of our listeners. I know I deeply appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners do too.
Well, thank you so much, Gabby. And you saying that is so touching to my heart. And also just knowing that you were touched by, as I was, this conversation, and that others will be hopefully touched by it as well. So thank you for having us.
Thank you for welcoming us. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being such an open and connected human being, easy to relate to. So really appreciate that. And this conversation certainly touched my heart. So I'm grateful that you got something from it, because I certainly did.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thanks, Gabby.
Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. I want to direct your attention again to the show notes, where you'll find relevant links from my conversation with Howard and Ina. Be sure to check them out. Their website's there. Their music links are there. Their social media links are there. So take a look through them. Connect with them if you have questions, you want to learn more from them. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to connect with like-minded spirits, make sure you jump on over to our Psychedelic Grad community page. I also included the link to that in the notes. When you join our community, you'll get a weekly newsletter filled with psychedelic goodies, including current psychedelic studies, different field announcements, and job openings. So great resources as you try to find your way in the space. Again, if you'd like to support Psychedelic Grad and the Curious to Serious podcast so that we can keep the dream alive, click the link in the notes to donate and buy us a coffee. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and maybe even a comment so that we know that we're doing a great job. Thank you again for joining us. I'm your host, Gabby. Stay curious, and we look forward to seeing you back here for our next episode of Psychedelic Grad's Curious to Serious podcast. Thank you.